Dear listener, I want to let you know about an event that's coming up in 2022. I'm putting on my own conference. It's a Ruby conference, which will take place in Las Vegas. It's called
Sin City Ruby!
Speakers include
Jason Charnes,
Brittany Martin,
Nick Schwatterer,
Andrew Culver,
Colleen Schnettler,
Kelly Sutton,
Andrea Fomera,
Ty Wood,
Ivy Evans,
Drew Bray. Tickets go on sale January 10th, 2022. For more information, go to sincityruby.com. Now on to the episode. Hey, today I'm here with Jason Charnes. Jason, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for letting me come on.
Yeah, thanks for being here. You've been on the show before, and obviously a lot of listeners might know you from your podcast, Remote Ruby, but in case anybody's not familiar with you, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, so my name is Jason, not to be confused with you. And I work for a company called Podia. We are building a digital platform for creators, and we use Rails. We're kind of, I don't know a good word for it, we're very much Railsway people. So I do that. I run a podcast, like you said, with two other people called Remote Ruby, where we just talk about Ruby and JavaScript. And other than that, that's about it.
Awesome. And today we're going to be talking about conferences. I'm in the midst currently of putting on my own conference, my first conference that I've ever done. And you've put on a conference yourself for a number of years. How many times, first of all, it's called Southeast Ruby, and how many times have you done it?
Yeah, we've done it three times. Our first year was 2017. Did 2018, 2019. We actually chose not to do 2020 before we even knew like a pandemic was going to be a thing. We were just like, we need a year off. And wow, were we, did we avoid chaos? But yeah, did that for 3 years. It's been located in Nashville, Tennessee historically, and hopefully bring it back soon.
Yeah. Yeah, I really enjoyed that one. I've attended once. I went in 2019. I had the honor of speaking at that one, and that was a lot of fun. Something I was thinking about earlier today, because you tweeted earlier today, Jace, or I think it was today. I saw your tweet today, at least, saying something about looking forward to Sin City Ruby, and it made me think about regional conferences and how regional conferences can be different from the bigger conferences, and there's just kind of like a warmth and camaraderie and all that stuff that occurs when the group is small as opposed to when the group is big. Do you feel that way too?
100%. The Southeast Ruby is actually my first regional conference. Like I even got to attend. And it's a lot different.
Hang on a second. You put on a conference even though you'd never been to a conference?
I'd been to Rails and RubyConf, but I had not been to like a regional smaller conference.
I see. Got it. Okay.
Yeah. The reason I started Southeast Ruby was when I came into like kind of that scene, like 2015 is when I really started going to conferences. All the like regional conferences started like shutting down. And so I was like, I had heard people talk about how awesome they were. And I was like, oh, I really want to experience that. So I just, like it's wild, but I was like, I'll just put on my own to experience it. And yeah.
And where did that come from? Because for me, like when I decided to put on my conference, it's a little bit like super imposter syndrome. Like who am I to do this? It feels like the kind of thing that somebody should have given you permission to do. And like, I keep being like, oh man, like nobody like said that I could do this. But, you know, you don't need anybody's permission. You can apparently just do it. So, like, how did you, like, make that leap or whatever?
I first looked to see if there were any, like, regional conferences in the Southeast. I don't remember the name of it right now. There was a Ruby conference in Nashville. It had, like, a – maybe it was called, like, Ruby Hoedown or something like that. And so it hadn't happened. I think 2012 was the last year. So I reached out to the organizer and was like, hey – I don't want to like step on your toes. Is this something you're ever going to do again? They're like, no, like not even in Nashville anymore. Like go for it. So I did kind of ask permission in a way. But yeah, it was more like I noticed that the other people running regional conferences were like some of them were like more well known in the community, but some of them were just, you know, Rubyists who wanted to put on a conference. And I was like, I think I can do this. It was probably one of the more bold things I've done in life. So
it is a little bit of a bold thing. Yeah, something has occurred to me as I've been like thinking about this and planning. And is, well, first, let me, Jason, let me give a little bit of the backstory of this conference, because yeah, the impetus that triggered me to do this was like a little unusual. Have I told you where this came from?
You have not, no.
Okay. So I used to do corporate training classes. I would like fly around to people's offices and teach a class for 3 days, 5 days, whatever. And it was an interesting experience. And like, frankly, the money was really good, or at least it had the potential to be very good. Most of my gigs were through training companies, and they would take a massive cut, like 50% or more, and I would only get a fraction of what the client actually paid. And I was always interested in the question of like, how do I get direct gigs where the client is just paying me directly? Never did quite figure it out, except one. I had one client that was direct, and that was fantastic. But I had like had this in my mind ever since I started training in 2017. And I had had the idea a few times of like putting on what they call an open enrollment class, where you just let anybody sign up as opposed to like doing a private class for one specific client. And then like when I got my current job, my boss and I talked about like, what if we do some classes? And that will be not only a way to do this thing, but like it can be kind of a hiring pipeline thing too. Like maybe we do 6 months of classes, and out of all the people who came through, maybe there's two of them who like seemed really good and we work well together, and like we hire those people. So that seemed like a mutually beneficial kind of thing. And then I decided, well, me and my boss like talked about doing one, and like pandemic stuff and like all that, and it was kind of like flirting with the idea and never quite going forward. And then we like at some point I'm like, hey, what if we just, let's just like pick a date and just do it. And my boss is like, fine. But then the Delta variant came out, and like I kind of hit the brakes on it. But then later I finally just said like, oh, here's what happened, here's what happened. I went to RubyConf in November 2021, and I gave a talk there, and the room was like packed at my talk. I was like blown away by how many people were in, and it was a really big room, and there was just people everywhere, completely filling the room, every seat occupied, all along the walls were people, and I'm just like, whoa. Like, this tells me two things. One, people are ready for in-person events again. And two, like this particular talk, like I found something people are interested in. So I immediately, like during the conference, I went and I booked hotel space at the Tropicana in Las Vegas to put on a class. This particular topic was Docker. I think the talk title was A Gentle Introduction to Docker for Rubyists, even though it didn't really have much to do with Ruby. So I decided to put on this class. I made tickets available and got like no sales. Nobody bought a ticket. But the thing is, Jason, I had signed a contract with a hotel saying that I was like responsible for paying what they would have made from my reservation, my room block reservation, even if nobody came. So I was on the hook for like $5,000.
Been there.
yeah, I remember you telling me. And so I'm like, okay, it looks like this isn't gonna happen, and like maybe it could, but then I'd have to switch to like aggressively being like a Docker guy and doing this weird like left turn, so I didn't want to do that. And so I'm like, okay, how can I salvage this? How can I not lose this $5,000? And I'm like, I know, I'll just have a conference.
Simple enough.
Exactly. Because, you know, it's like you have to be like a certain kind of person in a certain situation to buy a ticket to a particular class. But like the interest for a conference is a lot broader. And like the ticket price, I was selling these tickets for like $1,500 or something. The ticket price for a regional conference, like a couple hundred bucks or whatever, a few hundred bucks, that's much more within the reach of like an individual's pocket money than going to a $1,500 class.
Right.
So that's where my conference thing came from.
Yeah, kind of like unintentionally force your hand into needing to fill a space. But I think a Ruby conference is good. Like, we need more Ruby, like regional Ruby conferences, because that is like a, to me, is really, I don't know, I consider a pretty important part. Like, Europe's really good about having regional Ruby conferences. Like, they have several, and like, I hope to go to one day. But in the US, We had Keep Ruby Weird, which was awesome, but I don't believe they're doing that anymore. When I say awesome, I mean it always looked like a lot of fun. I never got to go. There was Ruby on Ails, which was like, once again, one I never got to go to, but was, you know, meet in this theater, and like they had a special like Ruby brew they made for the conference. Like, it just, you know.
Where was that one?
That was in, I believe it was in Oregon somewhere, like the coast. I'm not 100% sure, but I was actually talking to Chris Oliver about that one this weekend. Like, he went to that one and was just telling me how amazing it was. And I think there was like a Midwest Ruby or something like that. So like, they've existed.
Yeah, Mountain West Ruby also.
Yes, Mountain West. And I'm sure there's many I'm not thinking of. And then, but like, they just kind of all started like, and understandably so, like, it's a lot of work to put on a conference. So like, these organizers are like, hey, I don't know if this is worth it for like my own like personal well-being, but then it kind of leaves a gap of like, oh, I want us to all get together and hang out though. So
yeah, there was one that I went to relatively recently, 2019. There was one called Ruby Hack. The Hack stands for High Altitude Coding Conference. That was in Salt Lake City.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, that was a great one. I think the only small ones I've been to were that and yours.
Okay.
And again, just like the small size, you like get to meet everybody, and it's like much more conducive to like forming new relationships and friendships than a big conference. The way I think of it is like, at a big conference, I feel like a spectator at an event, kind of. Whereas at a small conference, I feel like a member of a community or something like that.
Yeah, it gives you much more opportunity for like organic conversations to happen. Because like, if there's 100 of you and you're sitting at lunch, your chances are you're probably going to just like start talking to someone you don't know, or like one of these like after parties, like it's a lot easier. Or if there's someone who like you can, I don't like the word, but like you consider someone like famous, I guess, in the community, like someone you like look up to, right? Or someone you follow, that you may not have an opportunity to like meet at the big conference because everyone wants to talk to you. Like, it's a pretty good chance, if there's less people, that you'll get an opportunity to, and maybe even again organically it might happen. So it's something special about it.
Yeah, it's so funny. Like, I'm sure you've had the exact same experience that I'm now starting to have, which is like, I went to RubyConf and like people considered me to be a famous person. And like, there was at least one guy, he was like, well, it was because of my talk specifically. He was just like so stoked to hang out with me and like bought me a drink and stuff. And I'm like, this is like kind of a bizarre feeling. Yeah, I'm sure you've experienced that kind of thing too.
I don't experience that often. But I definitely have been on the other end of that, where like, there are a lot of people I'm like, can I please buy you a drink? Can I please like have coffee with you? Can I please just like talk to you for like 10 minutes? And like, I don't know. There's just a lot of really interesting, neat people in our community, which, I mean, there's neat people in every community, but I just feel like we have, Ruby's the only community I know, but I feel like we have a lot of those kind of people that are just cool and unique.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. That's always fun. Like, at a couple, I won't like name drop, but like I went to RailsConf in 2019, and then obviously RubyConf, like I mentioned, and like I got to hang out with some of the like famous people in the Ruby community, And it wasn't even necessarily like we met and it was some like meaningful interaction or something, but just like standing around in a circle and like chit-chatting with like people who we know of because they're like created some famous tool or like they're just a well-known person in the community or something like that. It's pretty neat to be able to have those opportunities.
Yeah, it's really cool. It's like, I don't know, it's like, as much as I say I don't like the word famous, it is like there are actors that I like that I will never meet. Like the opportunity will just never, ever happen. But there are other people that I look up to, right? Like in the Ruby community that I view with the same kind of like, I don't know, interest, like the same kind of like appreciation I have as like an actor, but I get to meet that person. Like I actually like will come across them. And that's, I think, what drives some of that. I don't know the right word for it. Like, you know, like calling people famous.
So. Yeah. And like an interesting like side benefit of having a podcast, which I've actually come to consider maybe one of the main benefits, is like I have an excuse to like have a reason to talk to some of these people who normally would not give me the time of day. Not because they're like unkind or anything like that, just because like why would anybody just like talk to some random person for no reason? But if you have a podcast, you can like invite them on the show and talk to them. It's amazing.
Yeah, I think part of that, like you said, it's not that they're unkind, it's just that they're busy. But it's like having a podcast, and if people listen to it, it's a way for them to like have a meaningful conversation, and it applied to multiple people, because like it's not just a private conversation between you and one other person. It's private. It's like a public conversation. So it's a little more valuable for them time wise. And I think that's a big sell.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause like if somebody wants to like talk to me and get like my thoughts on something or something like that, like I'm happy in principle to do that. But like my time isn't exactly my own to like give away, you know. I'm either taking away from work time or taking away from family time or something like that. But if I can like go on a podcast, then it feels more justifiable. Anyway, so you maybe before we started recording, you expressed maybe curiosity as to like where I'm at with the conference and stuff like that. And I'll share that a little bit. And I'm curious how you manage certain aspects of Southeast Ruby also. You know, one of the early things I did was to line up speakers.
Right.
And I didn't know exactly how I was going to go about that. I ended up just like handpicking pretty much everybody. And I'm pretty happy with like how that went. It wasn't super easy because like when you handpick the speakers, like you're necessarily excluding people because like I picked these certain people. That means everybody else who potentially could have spoken, I didn't pick them. And like there were some like painful choices and all that you can expect to come along with having like a limited number of slots available for a kind of thing like that. But now the speaker list is pretty much set in stone, so that's all taken care of. I have the hotel logistics all worked out. That was actually the very first thing, you know, as I shared in my story. I set up the ticket sales on Eventbrite. I had to decide like how much the tickets were going to be.
That's so tough.
Yeah, it was tough. How did you decide the first time that you did it?
I basically just pulled a number out of midair. So I think the first year was like $99, or like $119, or it was something in that, like that range between $99 and $150. But we didn't sell enough tickets or have enough sponsors to cover the cost. And that's when I was like, I charged way too little.
How big of a room block or whatever did you reserve?
So the first year we didn't do a hotel. We did the conference at a venue, appropriately named Ruby, in Nashville. And it was an old church that was converted into like a wedding, like venue kind of space. So we rented that and everybody kind of just found lodging nearby. That year, though, we did pay for all the speakers' hotel rooms, which we could not afford, but did anyway. The next year we did it, there was a local company that wanted to offer their event space for free. So we did that there, which was a huge help. It allowed us to put more money into like more things like food and just different kind of like ways to make the event more fun. And then the last year is when we did the hotel, and that one, I don't remember how many rooms we blocked out, but between like catering and room blocks and the venue space, I think we were on the hook for like $12,000 to $15,000.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's no joke. The amount of money involved, like it's more than a person could comfortably afford to lose.
Yeah, the first year we lost a lot of our own personal money, and at the time it was just my wife and I doing it, but like that year I had a bunch of freelance money like to offset it, and so like I obviously didn't want to spend that on that, but like we were very fortunate to kind of like break even in that regard. Plus we got a really good tax break that year from all the losses we took.
Oh, but yeah, the silver lining to losing money in business.
Right.
Yeah, it's a tough chicken and egg problem, because like if you reserve, well, in my case of the hotel, if I reserve too much space at the hotel, then I'll lose money. And if I reserve too little space, then there won't be enough rooms. And I realized at one point, like, okay, so I started off with a block of a certain size, and then it became clear that that was not going to be enough, so I increased it. And now it's looking like that's probably not going to be enough either. But I realized at one point, like, you know, I don't have to increase it anymore. There's no law saying that I have to.
Right.
And if people have to pay full price, then, like, I don't feel great about that. But I feel better about that. I feel better about people individually paying like a little bit more money each than me losing a whole bunch of money.
Yeah, you can also use it as like a way to create
light a fire under people.
Yeah, like, hey, we only have so many rooms left. That's a tough one. I think we met our block and we didn't increase it because it was like at that point it was like appropriately yours is in Vegas, but it was a gamble for us. Like, are we going to sell these out? Because, you know, putting on a conference, at least for me, is I think the most money we've ever like ended up with at the end of the year is like $1,000. And it's not like like that's being reinvested into like paying for the LLC, stuff like that. So it's like you got to be really careful. So like you want to be generous, but at some point you have to like make sure you don't end up in the hole.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I've heard it said many times, don't put on a conference to make money, because that's not how it tends to go. I'm very cognizant of that. I'm not doing it to make money. I'm only doing it to not lose money.
I think I'm really excited. I was actually talking to some people about trying to do a conference in Vegas. So, like, I think it's, like, a good city. I mean, love it or hate it, like, it is, like, a very touristy city. Like, it is a good place to travel to. It's easy to get flights to, at least in the U.S. Like, I think it's a good destination for a conference. So, like, I'm hoping that it goes well for you and you're like, oh, I want to do this again next year. Like, I hope it turns from, like, you know, CYA, cover your ass, more into like this rules. We got to keep doing this.
Yeah, I figured like, well, first of all, it's where my work is based, so it makes sense for that reason. And then it's like a place that people are used to having conferences at and stuff like that. And plus, it's just kind of a fun place.
It's fun. I'm not like a big gambler or really even like partier for that matter, but I try to go to Vegas once a year on vacation. Because I enjoy, like, anything you want to do is pretty much there.
What kind of stuff do you like to do there?
So, there's a place called the Neon Museum, and it is what they call, like, a boneyard, like a neon boneyard, and it's a bunch of old signs from old casinos and stuff for the last, like, 100 years. and they've restored some of them. They have special tours where they like put on these big light exhibits, and it's just, it's a really neat place. So you do a tour and you get the history of Vegas, but with neon signs. It's, I don't know. I love it. We go every time. But that's near like old Vegas, which is also interesting to me. So like the old, they call it downtown, and it's just a lot of history there. So I'm enamored by that kind of stuff. And last time my wife and I were there, we rented a car. We actually rented this like decked out Jeep and like drove like Red Rocks and Hoover Dam. There's just like I said, anything you could want to do, you can do. So
yeah, there is some pretty cool stuff. Yeah, I've seen the Neon Museum on Anthony Bourdain. That looks pretty cool. I haven't been there myself though. Have been to the Hoover Dam, and Red Rock Canyon is great. So like, I'm not actually like a huge Vegas person, which is kind of ironic because I go there all the time for work.
Right.
Some people, that would be like their dream, but not me. Because I'm not into gambling or like most of the Vegas activities or anything like that. One thing I really do like is the food. Vegas is a great town for food. And then I'm a big like nature person also. So I like to go out into the desert and like do hikes and stuff. And I'm hoping to incorporate something like that into the whole experience. So what I'm hoping maybe people are into is like, I did it on a Thursday and Friday, partly if people wanted to stay after and make a vacation out of it. Mm-hmm. And so like what might be cool is like on Saturday, maybe some people could, like we get a group together, go out to the desert or something like that. Or I don't know, Jason, if you've ever been to Mount Charleston. Have you been there?
Mm-mm, no.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting because like I went hiking there once. It was the middle of summer. It was like me and this other guy were going to go on a hike, but it was like 114 degrees at the place we looked at or something like that. And we're like, okay, maybe that's not our top choice. So we went up to Mount Charleston. There was still snow, not a lot of snow, but like there was actual snow. And as we ascended, the temperature just kept going down, of course. And it was like in the 70s or something as we got up there. And there was like this little waterfall that was like misting on us. It was actually like kind of cold up there. And it's like, whoa, this is so crazy that we can be like baking in the desert. And then like 20 minutes later, we're seeing snow.
That rules.
Yeah, and you can even like, you can like rent a cabin up there and like go skiing and stuff like that, obviously dependent on the time of year. So there's some of that stuff. Yeah, mainly like the nature and the food stuff is what I'm interested in. Have you been to what restaurants in Vegas have you been to?
Oh my gosh, so I'm embarrassed to say, so I'm like a sucker for like Gordon Ramsay TV shows. So I always hit up the like Gordon Ramsay restaurants.
His restaurants are great.
We've done Gordon Ramsay steak. We did that. My wife and I were there for Valentine's Day, oddly enough, did that. It's got a pub and grill, like a Ramsay pub and grill in Caesar's Palace. It's really good. Yeah, the burger place in Planet Hollywood's good. So I'm a sucker for like the big names places.
Yeah, I've been to all three of those Gordon Ramsay restaurants. You know, I'll be honest. So, okay, and I've been to those three plus the Gordon Ramsay fish and chips or whatever it's called.
Okay, that the one at the Link?
Yeah, yep. Yeah, that one was pretty good. Honestly, not like great, but good. The burger place I thought was fantastic.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So good.
The what is it, London Grill or whatever?
Yeah, it's the place at Caesar's. It's like the pub is what they call it or whatever.
Yeah, and that was like one of the best meals I've ever had in my life. I got this lobster roll that was like super good. There was this thing that was like these three different kind of pies or something. One of them was, they're like these mini pies. One was a shepherd's pie. I don't remember. Those were super, super good. Do you remember what you got at any of those places?
I got wings, which were like amazing. We watch the Gordon Ramsay shows, so we try to eat like some of the main dishes, like in Hell's Kitchen. When I went to Gordon Ramsay Steak, I got the beef Wellington just because I'd watched them make it on Hell's Kitchen for like 20 seasons. And I was like, oh, I got to try it.
Yeah. What'd you think?
It was wonderful. It takes a while and it's worth it.
Yeah. Yeah. We went there just a few weeks ago, actually. And my wife got the beef Wellington. I thought that was great. honestly, nothing else we got at Gordon Ramsay's steak I thought was all that great, but the beef Wellington was really good.
It's so weird. Like, I don't know. I feel like such a tourist. I don't know. Like, I don't feel like I'm really hitting like the like real Vegas places. I'm hitting all the like flashy ones, but it's awesome.
I think the flashy ones are the real Vegas places. It's
that's
like
true.
Vegas is like, I don't know. I feel like that's what you're supposed to do there, you know?
We were there with some friends one time, and we went to this steakhouse at one of the old casinos in downtown Vegas. And that felt like it still felt old, but not necessarily in a good way. But it felt like I was eating like, you know, like real, like Vegas cuisine. But I don't know. Oddly enough, I don't know. I think you and I have been in Vegas at the same time. I think we were both at MicroComp Starter 2017.
Mm. Yeah, it all kind of blurs together for me.
We didn't know each other, but I remember they did these like 5-minute, like, we'll review like your landing page things.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember you, if I'm not mistaken, didn't you have a book on Rails with Angular?
Yep, yeah.
And it was one of the books. One of the landing pages they like, did a review of during the conference.
Yeah, I remember that well. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, and we didn't like meet or talk or anything.
We didn't know each other. Like we had never crossed paths. I don't think we did at that conference. I was kind of like, I found like one group of people and just kind of like stuck with them because I was nervous at that conference. But
yeah, that's funny. That's funny. And then I think we first met in earnest at RailsConf 2019, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, that sounds right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you're how do you feel about the conference right now that you have lined up? Are you nervous? Do you feel like you kind of got all your things taken care of?
I have an unusual disposition when it comes to stuff like this. Normally, the question people would be asking me is like when I have a conference talk, for example, coming up, and they ask me if I feel nervous. And my answer is always, no, I'm going to save all my nervousness for like 5 minutes before it happens.
Sure.
And so that's how I deal with those things, oddly. So like, I'm not nervous, maybe partly because it doesn't feel real. I do feel concerned. Not in like a really bad way. Like that sounds like maybe a too serious of a way to put it. But it's like, you know, there's a lot of stuff that could potentially go wrong, conceivably.
100%.
Thanks for the reassurance.
Listen, I know that that's not what you necessarily want to hear, but I 100% am like, yes. Even after the conference, I was like, can something go wrong still? You know, it's a lot of responsibility, but
yeah. So I'm just trying to have like the fewest moving parts possible. And like, I'm setting my ambitions relatively low. You know, it's kind of like with all my stuff, like sometimes people ask me like how I'm able to produce so much content. And it's like, well, first of all, like do a little bit every day. And then like just set your sights really low, like lower the bar for quality and blah, blah, blah. And you can produce a lot if you just don't set your standards very high. And not that I'm trying to like make something that's going to be crap or whatever, but like I'm not going to try to have like the fanciest version of everything and like have a huge scope of activities and commitments and all that kind of stuff. It's like,
right,
we have a space, we're going to have some speakers, going to have some catered food and like the things that you expect from a conference, but like I'm not going to try to have like anything beyond that, because like the real enjoyment of the thing, I think, comes from like the spirit of it and like who's there and all that kind of stuff, rather than like some like specific activity or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. You want to just let like the people and the content really just be the value proposition of the conference.
Yeah, and obviously that can be done well or done badly. Like, I'm also very mindful of, like, how can I facilitate interaction among the attendees that's going to result in a positive experience for most people? And that's something I'm still thinking about and open to suggestions from anybody and stuff like that. Because, like, one obvious answer is just, like, take the people and some alcohol and mix it all together, and you probably have a pretty good time. But I don't want it to be just that.
Yeah, and you have a number of people that don't drink, and so like, and some people that like basing events purely around like alcohol is
it's not great.
The thing they do, and so like you want to make sure that you cater to like you make something inclusive for everyone. So it's tough, and at the same time, it's like you have this cool idea of like going and doing a hike, but you're not going to get everyone together to go do that. Like, so
exactly. Yeah. And I'm not necessarily worried about accommodating every single last person, but there's a lot of people who like don't want everything to revolve around booze. Understandable. I don't want everything to revolve around right. booze. Yeah. And so having kind of a variety of different things so that even if somebody skips one particular component of it, they're not missing like the main thing.
Right. The Tropicana has a little like a small event space outside too. I don't know, even if you like just made it like, hey, it's alcohol, but it's not open bar, like you could just get people out there in that space, and that's at least getting them together. I know about that space because my brother-in-law got married in that space, but also I think MicroConf had a couple of mixers out there, and like it's a good space. But
oh yeah, I remember that.
Do you have any sponsors?
No.
That's something that we struggled with the first year. We did get sponsors, but oftentimes we've had sponsors like want to organize events outside of the conference, which helps solve the getting people together problem. And it's like, hey, so-and-so is sponsoring this, and this is what's going to be like. And we probably have about 60% of our attendees do those events,
Okay.
like those extracurricular events.
Yeah. So some thoughts that I've had are like some kind of outdoor nature type thing at some point, which unfortunately that has to happen. Like, I don't know. It's not like something you can just take an hour and do that for an hour right. because like you have to get there and all that stuff. So that'll probably have to be a separate thing afterward. But like I know sometimes conferences have like board games or something like that.
Yeah.
Which that seems kind of good. I'm not into like board games to the extent that some people are, but I enjoy like a chess and Scrabble and stuff like that. And for me it's like, okay, I don't need to not to like make the whole conversation about alcohol, but like I don't need to drink in order to have fun. But if I'm not going to drink, I don't want to go to a party that's like booze oriented, you know. If I'm not right. going to drink, let's play a rousing game of Scrabble.
Right.
Like that's an act, because that's like more intellectually engaging than just like standing around a bunch of half drunk people or whatever.
Yeah. And so I think like we're talking about this, then what's coming to my head is like you don't necessarily need to cater to everyone at one time, but maybe if there were multiple opportunities, like different events that cater to certain people, like exactly. then you at least are working to get people together. Because yeah, like RailsConf, Mike Parham usually organizes board game night, and there's all kinds of like cool events around. I mean, they're bigger conferences, so you have to have multiple like events happen outside. But yeah, the opportunity is there.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm really excited. I'm curious. So right now there's is it 8 speakers?
I think 10 now.
In how are you dividing those up over 2 days? Are you gonna do like 5 and 5?
Yeah,
what's your idea around the scheduling and stuff?
Good question. I want to like do the talks in the morning, like how do I want to put it, like more talks in the morning than in the afternoon, and kind of leave the afternoon a little bit more open. Like maybe if the talks wrap up by like 3 or 4 or something like that.
Yeah.
And let's, you know, I haven't thought super specifically about the schedule because that's not something that's like a prerequisite to anything else other than like sharing the schedule with people.
Right.
But like, if you say each talk is going to be like 30, 40 minutes, then maybe five talks span like 5, 6, 7 hours. Let's see, if we start at 9 a.m., 9 plus 5 is 14, that's 2 p.m. Yeah, so I think that kind of works out with the target of freeing up around 3 or 4 p.m.
Yeah, you got an hour for lunch in there. And
right.
We did 30-minute breaks between each talk, and that tip came is one of the Keep Ruby Weird organizers. When I first started Southeast Ruby, they did that. And that's one of the like most complimented things about our conference is people love the breaks between talks because they get a chance to go talk to the speaker about the talk. Mm-hmm. And that was really fascinating because I would have probably been like, okay, 10-minute break.
Yeah.
And like warn people out. That was a really fascinating thing.
Yeah, that's a good tip.
But I'm excited for it, and I'm excited to see another regional Ruby conference. I'd love to see them like pop up over the US again because it's
It would be great. You know, like there's all these conversations about like the Ruby community size and enthusiasm level and all that kind of stuff. And something I don't hear discussed a lot is like, hey, we don't have to be just passive bystanders. We can actually be involved and actively grow the Ruby community. And right. I feel like if we start having like more Ruby conferences across the country and world or whatever, we can get more people to use Ruby, and we can stop hearing people like ask like, hey, is Ruby dying? Which is like, it's annoying to hear people ask that. It's annoying to even like talk about it at all anymore. And then it can start being just like, it's growing again. And people talk about like, oh wow, Ruby really made a comeback. Wouldn't that be a great conversation to start having?
Yeah. Yeah. It would just be like, it's a really solid community. Like it's not as big as JavaScript or Java or, you know, even Python, but it's solid and it's not necessarily dying. It's just living, and I like it. So yeah. The more we can embrace its life, I guess, like the better. So
absolutely. And maybe that's a good place to leave it. But before we go, anything you want to share with listeners, maybe anything you're working on, any place you want people to go to learn more about you online, anything like that?
Yeah, most of the things I would link you to are on my website, which is just jasoncharnes.com. Links to my conference, which you could see like the past years, because we don't have an active one right now. Twitter, I have a course, stuff like that. The Remote Ruby podcast, you can find all of that there.
Awesome. Well, Jason, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Yeah, thanks.